Today's Issues continues on AFR with your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues is the name of this here show on American Family Radio, and we thank you for listening. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano and Steve Jordahl. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning,
Ed.
Good morning, Steve.
By the way, good morning, Tim.
Before
we jump into the news of the day, let me just tell you that Senator Tom Cotton will be with us from Arkansas. At least that's the plan in just a few minutes. Either one of you guys a Game of Thrones?
No.
I've never watched
I haven't seen a single episode, but I've been seeing all the furor yes. lately online about the carelessness of the filming.
I haven't watched an episode.
Carelessness of the filming. I haven't even heard that.
Haven't you?
I know they've got they're wrapping up the
it
whole
wrapped
thing.
Wrapped up
right?
last night, I think.
Okay.
But I haven't seen it. But is that what you're talking about, Tim?
I have not watched an episode of it either. Is that an HBO thing?
It is.
I think it is.
But I'm just saying, I you can't help but notice they're just this. I guess half the world's watching it as a.
Well, my understanding when it first came out is there was a lot of nudity and a lot of sex. And I thought, well, right. obviously no Christian's going to be watching that, but I think I'm wrong.
I don't know if there's nudity. Again, I haven't seen it, but what's been in the news lately is that they left a Starbucks cup on one of the tables that
right,
got it
no.
in the shot.
Yes, they did.
And last night they left a water bottle behind somebody's, yeah. On the floor that it got caught in one of the shots.
I heard about that. Anyway.
And Tim and I, you and I are the same way. We drive our wives crazy.
Right.
If I'm watching something and I see a mistake from one scene to another, the bottle was in one hand and then the next scene it's in the other, I say, well, rewind that. Right. My wife says, I believe you. Please just let it play.
Allison, my wife, she gets a little annoyed at me if we're watching something and I point out a plot hole.
Yes.
Huh? I go, wait a minute. He just said that 10 minutes ago. Now he's over here saying this. And everyone says, just watch the show.
Yeah.
Okay? Just chill out and enjoy the show. We're watching the show together here. So anyway, a lot to talk about this half hour. And is Tom Cotton expecting him to call in? Okay. So the half the world, I guess, is watching this Game of Thrones, which is over. Over now. The only show I've ever been, maybe we shouldn't confess this. I don't know because.
Guilty pleasures?
Are you well, no,
what are you saying we confess? Well,
okay,
I'm not even sure
just,
what you're about to say.
I'll just say the only show that I've ever been, quote, addicted to was 24.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've never seen. You told me that was a fantastic series. I never.
Well,
when I first found out about how everyone was talking about it, I'd like already missed the first season, and I thought, well, why jump in now?
But I watched the first season, but I quit watching the very last episode of the first season. They kill off one of the major characters who I really liked, and I was really mad, so I didn't watch anymore. I said, yeah. They're going to be killing off all my favorite characters. I'm not going to be watching this.
This is hilarious.
We had it on DVD, so I didn't watch it. Week to week to week to week to week.
Yeah.
But it was somebody gave us season one of 24. This is, gosh, 10 years ago or so. And that person who gave us that might as well have been a drug dealer.
Right.
Because Allison, my wife, and I, we just like, okay, it's midnight. All right, we got to go to work tomorrow. Well, let's just watch the first part of one more.
Well, yeah, you're not going to watch the first part of something you're binge watching.
That 24. Don't start watching 24 with Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
Sutherland, if you don't want.
I'm sorry. This is hilarious. I'm looking at an image, a picture on Google of Game of Thrones, and there is a Starbucks coffee cup sitting
right on the table.
That is that's amazing. Yeah. That someone missed that.
I know, a major Hollywood production, and you got a Starbucks cup in a movie that's set in medieval times, right?
Well, they are ubiquitous. I don't know. I didn't know they were time ubiquitous as well.
Wow.
All right, Steve, what do you got, my friend?
Our president has been on his Twitter account, but you didn't didn't expect that. He's tweeting out, and he's giving a little bit of a threat to Iran.
I wish he wouldn't do that.
Well, you're not alone. This is what he tweeted. If Iran wants to fight, That will be the official end of Iran. Iran. What do we say? How do we say it?
It doesn't matter. Usually. You don't tweet that.
Never threaten the United States again. Iran responded angrily. I talked this morning with one of our military sources, Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis, who you may know.
Yeah, sure.
And he's of your mind, Tim. This is what he had to say about the tweet.
This only plays into the Russian and Chinese hands. You know, we're in a different world than we were even a few years ago. Our near-peer adversaries would love for us to get re-engaged and locked down in the Middle East with our forces. We can't afford that. We need to be very, very careful about going ahead. Now, that doesn't mean the Iranians aren't dangerous. They are. I just would like to see the president probably sit on his tweet account and not do anything like that, because all it does is raise the temperature.
I agree with that. And I support President Trump. I voted for him, and I support him in his general sense. And most all the things that he desires, I desire for our country. I think he's done a lot of good. However, the tweeting can be helpful, and I understand why he does it, because he needs to bypass the mainstream media,
right,
to get his
right.
message out. And so I don't have a problem with using Twitter per se, but I'm just saying he should have enough, he should be smart enough, in my opinion, and to have somebody advising him when you're talking about matters such as nuclear war.
Yeah.
All right, or even going to war at all, it's not something to make idle threats about, Ed. For instance, don't say on Twitter it's going to be the end of Iran if they mess with us anymore. That's basically
right.
what he said. This isn't for WWE
right.
type comments now.
Well, especially because, you know, if we're talking about a nuclear exchange with, I mean, there are a lot of Christians in Iran. There are a lot of innocent people who are just being oppressed by this regime. If we're talking about a conventional war, I've looked at estimates. One British admiral has warned we'd need a million soldiers to invade
Iran. Oh, that's
Iran.
Not going to happen.
So,
So what does the president mean?
So what does he mean?
See,
it'd be the end of Iran.
I don't think he needs to say that.
Right.
I think he would be better served to say, and, you know, something like there will be serious consequences.
Yes.
Or something of that. But to say the end of Iran, if they what? What did he say? If they.
He says if they want to fight, that will be the official end of Iran.
I just think in that case, Sarah Huckabee.
Yeah. Sanders.
Kelly Conway and the rest of them, they need to go.
It's just hyperbole.
Yeah, I mean,
everyone knows.
Yeah, you probably can't talk to the mullahs of Iran the same way you talk to Rocket Man.
Right.
He's a little more isolated
than
they are.
I know. But you guys know what I'm saying.
Yep.
I think Colonel McGinn, again, I appreciate the president in so many ways. And I know he's a patriot and is looking out for the best interest of our country. I just don't agree with tweeting about war in that way.
Right.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We have with us now United States Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas. He's the author of a new book called Sacred Duty, A Soldier's Tour at Arlington National Cemetery. And the book is available now. It's published by Morrow. And the senator joins us. Good morning, Senator.
Hey, gentlemen. I hope you're doing well. Thank you for your interest in Sacred Duty.
Absolutely. I'm Tim with Ed and Steve here. Senator, are you in Arkansas today or in Washington?
No, I just got back to the nation's capital. We are in session one more week before we go into Memorial Day, and that's one reason why Sacred Duty is out on bookshelves now. I wanted to tell the story of the old guard of Arlington going into this very special day for our nation when we honor our fallen heroes.
So go ahead. Tell us what we will find if we purchase the book Sacred Duty.
You'll find the amazing story of the Old Guard of Arlington, which is literally the Old Guard of the Army. The Old Guard is 3 years older than our Constitution. They were founded in 1784, and for 160 years, they fought on our nation's front lines in every major conflict, in places like Mexico and Bull Run and Gettysburg, but for the last 71 years, the Old Guard has served as the Army's official ceremonial unit and escort to the President at Arlington National Cemetery. I myself served there for about 16 months in 2007 and 2008 between my tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, where we performed military honor funerals and ceremonies around the Capital Region, guarded the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and sacred duty is a look behind the scenes of how those soldiers perform those missions, of their ethos of excellence, of their striving for perfection for every single event, because funerals in Arlington are truly a no-fail, zero-defect mission, a once-in-a-lifetime moment for those families that have been a lifetime in the making.
Senator Cotton, this is Ed here. I recently had, in March, had the opportunity to go on an honor flight with my dad, who's was in the Marine Corps during Korea. And so one of the things we got to see was the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier and the changing of the guard there. And I got to tell you, I was kind of awestruck by how, I don't mean this to sound flippant, but how seriously this was taken. There was a chain on one side where the veterans who were on this flight were in wheelchairs with their guardians, and then a couple of gentlemen kind of, I don't think they snuck, but they kind of moved around us and got on the other side of the chain to take a picture. And this guard, I mean, shouted. I mean, his rifle came down and he said, "Stand behind the chain." I thought this man, the soldier, I said, takes this very, very seriously. These other individuals weren't. Why, for someone who, you know, nowadays might be a little flippant about this kind of ceremonial process, why is it important that we have soldiers who take this very, very seriously?
The tomb guards are actual guards. Their operating manual says they hold the most prominent guard post in the entire country. Out of the thousands of places where service members are pulling guard right now, the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier is the most prominent one, in part because those unknowns from World War I, World War II, and Korea have come to embody something beyond merely the unknown soldiers and the missing soldiers from those three wars. They have really come to embody all of those who have laid down their life in defense of our nation from the Revolutionary War to today. It's kind of a special place inside of Arlington, which is itself our national place of mourning and remembrance. And as you say, they are indeed guards. It's very rare for people who go, you know, once or twice in their life to see what you saw. But if anyone who's on the plaza observing the changing of the guard or the guarding of the tomb does not maintain silence and respect, they will step off the mat and they will remind them of the rules of decorum. Sometimes those sayings are unintentional or even unavoidable. For instance, you know, there might be a special needs child who has difficulties with impulse control, or a senior citizen, oftentimes an elderly veteran, who has trouble hearing and doesn't understand that he might be speaking at a louder voice. They have the discretion, as I write in Sacred Duty, to handle each individual instance as they see fit, and oftentimes they will try to do something less than what you saw so as to maintain the atmosphere of silence and respect at the tomb, but also not to embarrass or otherwise come down too hard on someone who is trying to pay their respects and to honor those unknowns.
Right. Senator Steve Jordahl here. I've been to this ceremony at the Tomb of the Unknown. It is remarkably moving and so impressed with these soldiers, day, night, rain, shine, snow, sleet, hail. They are there and guarding this tomb. You mentioned that the memorial has World War I, World War II, and Korea. Is it because we've gotten DNA testing since then that we don't have somebody from Vietnam or the wars in the Middle East yet?
Steve, that's largely right. With the introduction of ID tags a little over 100 years ago, and then the advancement first of things like dental records and fingerprinting, and now with DNA records, we just have many fewer unknown remains in our conflict. We did, however, have a Vietnam unknown for about 14 years. As I write in Sacred Duty, the story of the Vietnam War is a longer and more complicated story than the story of the other three unknowns, kind of like that war itself. There were very few unknown remains from Vietnam. When an unknown was chosen in the early 1980s, with strong encouragement from veterans organizations, from Congress, and the Reagan administration, it was done in part through a handful of mistakes or oversights or controversial decisions by some of the forensic experts and specialists who had been handling those remains. So almost from the beginning, there were some researchers, largely amateur researchers, who contended that the remains were, in fact, First Lieutenant Michael Blassie, who had been shot down in Vietnam. And when CBS Evening News aired some of their research in 1998, Secretary of Defense William Cohen decided that it was compelling enough, and the Blassie family requested that the Vietnam unknown be disinterred and that he be tested. That happened overnight in May of 1998, and in fact, it was proven to be Michael Blassie, who is now buried at the National Cemetery in Jefferson Barracks outside St. Louis, near where his family lives and where he grew up. That crypt now says, honoring and keeping faith with our missing service members, 1958 to 1975, is a kind of symbol to all those who still haven't come home from that war, whom we still search for this day. And while it is controversial, more so than the other three unknowns, I think the controversy is somewhat misplaced, because it simply goes to show all Americans, especially the next generation of Americans, of the lengths to which we will go to find you if you should fall in the line of duty, to bring you home, to identify you, and to return you to your loved ones.
We're talking to Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, who's the author of the book Sacred Duty, A Soldier's Tour at Arlington National Cemetery, and the book is available now, so be sure to pick up a copy of it. Senator, thanks so much for your time. We look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Yeah, thank you all for having me on.
Okay, bye-bye. He himself a veteran.
Yes.
I might add, for those who didn't know.
Yes, he served in Iraq with the 101st Airborne Division and in Afghanistan with a provincial reconstruction team. And listen, I to Steve's point, that ceremony at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier was moving, and I'll tell you, I don't think women do serve as guards or do.
I don't know if that's have changed the men, in the last.
The men that I saw, I'll just put it this way: the men that I saw were so exact. You've been there, haven't you, Tim? I mean, you go on tours.
Oh, many times. Yeah. Yes,
it's very, very impressive, and. My understanding from one of our tour guides was that they will, you know, some people just don't understand what is being, you know, manifested there in terms of the respect and honor for those who never came home. And they'll be on their phones and stuff like that. And these guards will tell them to stop. And it's, anyway, if you get a chance to go, folks, it's well worth it and is very impressive.
Indeed. Let's dive into some of what's going on with our presidential candidates, the Democrats. As you mentioned before, Pete Buttigieg was on Fox News, and you played a couple clips of that town hall. Later on, I think something came up during the town hall, and he kind of brushed it over about Thomas Jefferson. What does he think about Thomas Jefferson? And he was on the Hugh Hewitt show a little later, and Hugh Hewitt asked him point blank, Thomas Jefferson, owner of slaves, should he be removed? What about all these famous Thomas Jefferson dinners that they have? And this is what his response was, the question and the response from Hugh Hewitt.
Should Jefferson Jackson dinners be renamed everywhere because both were holders of slaves?
I think it's the right thing to do. You know, over time you develop and evolve on the things you choose to honor. And Jefferson's more problematic. You know, there's a lot to, of course, admire in his thinking and his philosophy. It's not like we're blotting him out of the history books. You know, naming something after somebody confers a certain amount of honor.
There you go. So those that, and of course, if you throw out Jefferson because he owned slaves, there goes Washington because, well, he owned slaves as well. And many of our forefathers who did that inherited them, perhaps, in many cases. And it was before that ethic came to bear on our country.
You know, I always want to ask these people to name a country at the time of our founding, to name a country that did not have slaves, because slavery was ubiquitous. I mean, that's just the way societies, you know, existed. It's not defending it, obviously. I'm just saying what you are arguing is that nobody in any society should be honored at that time because of slavery.
Or any other issue that might come up that is on PC these days.
Right. I think you've got to separate accomplishments and ideas and philosophies that are worth praising, and the individuals who gave birth to those ideas, mm-hmm. like the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson. You got to separate that from their cultural blindnesses that they grew up in. Yeah.
So you're telling me America didn't invent slavery?
That is absolutely true.
No,
tongue in cheek, huh? But that's, yeah. That's the way these people seem
to. We invented it and exported it around the world. You don't know this, Ed?
Not true.
You know, I agree with you completely what you're talking about right there. And I think some of these people on the left don't want to allow for, they want to make everything so easy to look back in history and say, okay, this person did this or this person didn't do that. That's why we cut them out of history, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's just, it's more complex than that. It's more complicated than that. A lot of things, especially this issue that divided our country.
Right. Well, look at this. Look at the issue of abortion. How many of these liberals, 50 years from now, let's say our society, let's say all of Western civilization moves past abortion, we look at it as a horrifying time in human history, just like slavery.
Right.
How many of them, if you ask them now, what would you think if 50 years from now we wanted to cut President Obama, out of the honor that right. you believe he should have because of his views on abortion? Or would you like to cut him some slack 50 years from now and say, well, I'm saying from a...
It's a little
from
bit a, of a loaded question from a liberal.
No, I know, but I'm saying from a liberal's perspective, would you be willing to say everything you believe President Obama did that was good should be thrown out because he believed in abortion?
Well, also, how about this? How about these people saying, look, yes, Thomas Jefferson did own slaves, as did a lot of Americans at the time. But also, look at the documents that they get. And by the way, what were their views on slavery that may have led to the end of it down the road? Because right. look at the documents, and they gave us a pathway forward to ultimately right. ending slavery, right?
Yes.
And it took a civil war to do that, but we ended slavery. Let's celebrate that.
The ideas in the Declaration of Independence were virtually unheard of in human history. I mean, we're talking about right. the growth of understanding by our founding fathers. This was a break from a past filled with tyrants and kings and queens that could murder anybody they wanted. And the ideas that these men came up with changed human history.
Right.
Yes, they had blindness for the better. Yes, they had blindnesses, but for snowflakes on college campuses who are immersed in their social media.
So get rid of Thomas Jefferson?
Yes, I'm sorry.
It's insane.
The inmates are in charge of the asylum.
Yeah. All right. Other than that, we got much to say. Not much
Other
to
than
say
that,
about
life
that.
Is good.
Life yes. is perfect, yeah.
That's right. Thank you, Ed.
Yes, sir.
Steve.
My pleasure.
Our thanks to Senator Tom Cotton and Brent Creeley for running the controls for us. And see, Walker didn't do anything today, did he?
Senator Brent Creeley. That is a nice sound.
I'll thank Walker tomorrow when he actually does yeah. something.
There you go. Huh?
Yeah. And our thanks
Walker.
Our thanks to Fred.
Abuse.
All right. See you tomorrow, folks. Have a great day.